raised rowdy.
All right, everybody, let's get podcasting here. We have a lot to talk about, huh? Everybody, welcome to the Raised Rowdy podcast. My name is Kurt Ozon.
I'm Nick Tressler.
We have Benny G in the house. What up, brother?
What up? Where should I look?
Over here? You can look at me or at Nick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, great.
Yeah, you're great. Good.
We're rocking.
Yeah.
I don't know if I was supposed to look at some camera or...
Everyone stare at the cameras only. They're everywhere. No, just kidding. Welcome. Dude, this is awesome to have you in here.
Thanks for having me.
I feel like everything's blowing up and going crazy for you right now for a good reason.
Thank you.
And I'm getting a lot of people calling me being like, hey, you know that Benny G guy, what's the deal with him? Has he got management? Has he got booking? Has he got a label? Does he have production and all this stuff like that?
Oh my God.
I'm like, I'm not his manager. So
that's good though. When the town talks, that means that everything's going in the right direction.
It's cool. I mean, I've never experienced people caring about the music other than like my parents and my friends that when they were drunk. So
yeah,
we're doing the thing right now.
Hell yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, congrats at being extremely good at music.
Thank you.
You've got a gift, man.
Thank you, man. Oh.
And thanks for coming to do our podcast. You said this is your kind of first grown-up podcast?
First grown-up podcast.
Okay. We might have to go over like the whole like, how did you learn to play guitar?
Well, why don't we start with how like you guys met? I remember you telling me that you met Benny at an event.
Yes, it was at the first time I was at the basement with Kaylee. You guys did that like.
Oh yeah, that was right for Caitlin Smith.
Yeah, and I'm like ripping on the guitar and just singing. And you were younger than you are now. How were you?
It's probably 18.
Yeah, dude, just shredding guitar. Singing his ass off. I was like, oh my God.
Thank you, dog.
Yeah, dude. Totally ripping it.
Thank you, man.
Oh my. I was like, dang. And Kaylee's like, yeah, he's like 18. I'm like, holy shit. Dude,
and
monumental talent.
Absolutely. And then we got to see you play Whiskey Jam.
Yeah, that's right.
When we went to a Whiskey Jam. We were there just hanging in the crowd. And that was my first time seeing you, which, again, as Kurt said, and as the music that people can listen to explains, when you hit the stage, you put people on notice immediately.
Oh, man. Thank you, dude.
Absolutely.
It's fun. I mean, I play with just musicians that are keeping me on my toes. So,
dude, your band is bad. You got some fucking great players.
Thank you, man. No, yeah. It's really, it's cool that they want to be a part of the music. And yeah, I'm just grateful for it, you know?
Yeah. Tell us about the dudes in the band. I'm curious. Did they play on your EP?
Yeah.
Okay, we need to dive into that, too, because I have a lot of questions.
Of course, man. So, cut the EP with Eddie Spear.
Okay, I was going to ask who produced it.
Yeah.
Okay, very cool.
Eddie produced it and just kind of hit it off, and he's
so,
the man.
And people don't know, Eddie's also produced Marcus King, Zach Bryan, Colby Acuff. He's just a Grammy-winning Sierra Ferrell, Grammy-winning cat, awesome producer, super cool, creative, really smart guy.
Exactly. And I don't know. I just kind of wanted to have the boys play on it because I was like, I feel like might sound cliche coming from a musician, but we were just kind of creating the thing live before we, you know, had any record of it. And I just felt like it'd come across most authentic if we kind of replicated the live thing to record it. And that's kind of what we did. I mean, most of the songs, besides like overdubs, like keys overdubs or Dobro or something like that. I mean, it's all pretty much live takes and like kind of cutting it old school, which felt pretty cool. I mean, it was kind of like the whole like tape method. So
yeah, I love that. And I mean, honestly, your sound is a throwback, you know, like
thank you, man. Yeah.
Yeah. You can hear the soul in it. You know, it's not just country. It's a little bit of everything. And so that old school mentality, you know, seems like you're an old soul. And Kurt and I were talking about the band. Your band is so good.
Thank you, dude.
Super cool to get to have those guys in and feel a part of the project as well.
Dude, yes. And that's, I'm sorry, totally to not say who's in the band right now.
Yeah,
but
let's do it.
James Bandini plays the bass. I grew up with him. Mm-hmm. Grew up two towns away from each other on Long Island.
Mm-hmm.
George Carnes, who is in the Corduroy Cadets, mm-hmm. He's the man. And we just, so that it was really just George and James for, that stuff. And we had Axel Cole play drums. But we got a new guy named Jack Dratch and he is badass. He's really good. Drummer.
Oh, cool.
He's really good. Just insane feel Philly dude. So he got like the pocket and the soul and I'm excited to play some shows with them. So.
That's great. Well, and speaking on that, I know by the time this comes out, you will have announced that you're opening up on the a tour. Why don't you tell us about
that? Yeah, so going to be playing all the Ty Myers shows coming up. And, yeah, I'm super excited. I've never played stages that big. I mean, we're doing, like, Red Rocks and and just wild, wild places. I'm incredibly pumped. And on a few of those shows, Brent Cobb is also on it. So, I mean, I grew up listening to Brent Cobb and all the stuff he did with Dave Cobb. And, I mean, it's totally, like, full circle. Pretty wild. Also, like, some arenas in there. I'm like, God.
So cool. And Ty's out.
Yeah, so we were talking before the podcast started. Ty is opening for us on Luke's Stadium Tour now.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's great, man. Band slamming. And how would you describe Ty's sound? What would you guys say?
It's kind of a bit John Mayer-y, but yeah. in the country realm. Like, it has, like, a bit of, like, a Parker thing, too, I think.
Sure.
I don't know. I'd say it's kind of like a marriage between those two things. I don't know. I mean, he probably listens to so much broader music, too, but yeah, I kind of get Parker and Mayer vibes.
Totally. Yeah, to me, it's sort of like a smoother sound. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not as rocking or something. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, 100%.
And, but there's some soul in there. I think, like, your music is just dripping with soul. So it makes sense that you guys would pair together for a tour.
Yeah, I'm happy he's having me. I'm should be chill, you know?
Yeah, dude. And so when you're going on tour, are you doing solo acoustic or are you bringing the boys or what?
Bringing the boys, man. Okay. So George is actually going to sit this tour out because he's going to be with the Cadets doing some stuff. But it'll be either Power Trio or we're going to bring on Aux Guy and he'll play a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, like Dobro Guy?
Not sure yet. Yeah. I've been thinking about it because a lot of this music has organ on it. So it would be cool to kind of, I guess, have a more like electric kind of live set, especially in these bigger venues. So having maybe a keys player would be cool. Also, Aux guitar player. We haven't found our guy yet. So
gotcha. Okay, well, keep my ear to the ground.
Yeah, man, I'll let you. Oh, that would be sick. Thank you, man. I appreciate it.
I'll check my availability.
Come on,
come
dude.
Play Red Rocks.
Oh my God, man.
Not that I'm a good organ player or anything, but listening to the record, it's like one thing that you've done. It's like your social media. I kind of hate talking about social media, but we have to because you're crushing
it. Let's do it. Thank you.
It's like you put out these videos and it's just you singing with these great players and it sounds amazing. And then I listen to the record and it's like, it's not any different than the social media stuff. It's just like you have your sound dialed in. It's like acoustic, rootsy. There's some slide guitar, like you said, organ, pocketed. It's grooving, you know, songs about pretty girls and
that's right.
And it's just like, but it's simple. You know what I mean? It's nothing complicated on here, but it's just done extremely well. And I love that.
I'm happy you like it. I mean, that means a lot, dude. I felt like with these videos, they kind of taught me something. A lot of the music I recorded in the past felt maybe a little too polished for my vibe. Mm-hmm. And people just started connecting when we broke it down a little bit. And it just made it all about the musicians playing and like the songs as bare as they could possibly be. So that just kind of feels, you know, the videos are kind of that, and that's why we didn't really want to change anything, because it just feels like people are connecting with that sound and vibe.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And honestly, when you hear you, your voice is doing the heavy lifting. You know what I mean? Like, that's the focal point when you're on stage or when I'm listening to this, you know, project. The way you can make runs and, you know, you can compare it sonically maybe to like some Stapleton stuff and things like that.
Literally one of my heroes. So.
Yeah. You can hear it a little bit, you know, and honestly, there's not many people that can do Stapleton and do it justice. So it's cool that you can, you know, like sonically in that vibe. But also, like you talked about, I think realness is so important right now. And, you know, there's a lot of younger folks that maybe that's not the thing that they're putting out into the world. So I think the honesty and the realness of your music and what you're presenting is one of the things that makes it feel so that you want to like get on board with it. For me, at least.
Yeah, it's crushing, man.
I'm happy you guys like it.
Damn. So tell us the name of the project.
Why am I blanking on the name of the project as soon as you say it? What was it again? Oh, When You Know, You Know.
Well, mm-hmm. There you go.
It's a lyric in a song called I Got a Feeling. And I just thought it was, I mean, I wish there was some like deeper meaning behind it. I thought it was a catchy title. I was like, when you know, you know, it kind of applies to what the project's about, which is like every song kind of takes you through this chronological phase of a relationship, you know, from when it starts and everything's pretty to it all falling apart. And when you know, like doesn't work out. But I also thought it was just a cool phrase.
Sounds like a EP title.
Yeah, EP's title.
Yeah, and so we got 6 songs coming out, and this will drop on the 27th, I think. Is that right?
Is that right, Courtney?
April
17th. April 17th. There we go.
Well, congrats on the release if it's out then, whenever we drop this.
It is.
Okay.
Perfect. Well, no, the announce is out, but the album's not going to be out yet.
Oh, maybe that's what it was. Yeah. Gotcha.
Sick.
But I think that's a cool part, too, is like a lot of people try to talk about things that they maybe don't necessarily know, you know? So young love and the struggles that come from that, you know, that feeling that you get when you think you found your person, even when maybe it doesn't end up being your person, I think is so timely for where you're at probably in life, and as well as like your fan base of like what you're trying to build and the people that are going to attach onto your music. So I think that's a great thing to do, and something that is just, again, going to make even more people like feel like they're a part of it as well.
Yeah, man. I just hope, that if there's any teenagers and people listening to this thing that are my age, they have a little something they could connect to.
Yeah.
Be cool.
I mean, I'm old and I feel it. You know, I remember those days for sure.
Heck yeah, man.
Yeah, nostalgia drip for everyone for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Is there any specific girl that some of the songs are about?
Yeah.
I mean, that's how it works though, you know?
Yeah, no, it's a lot of it is based on some, I mean, yeah, everything is based on something real.
Yeah.
I feel like when I was younger, just starting to write songs, like it was almost a bit harder for me to write songs about real stuff, just because I didn't live through really anything. But this is really the first body of songs where I'm like, okay, like I just believe everything. And I mean, it's all based on true stories and stuff.
Yeah. How about co-writers?
Yeah. I mean, some legends. Let's see here. Amy Wodge, who like straight up wrote like Thinking Out Loud. I wrote I Got a Feeling with her. She's the best. Thinking about the other songs, Pretty Girls, Benjamin Francis Leftswich. He's done a lot of amazing work. He's done some stuff like the 1975.
Oh, cool.
And, John Green, who's a genius songwriter, producer. Trying to think of
is
other
there like
people.
A lot of folks like out of the country genre? A
lot of folks out of the country genre.
Yeah.
I kind of just hit my people with a list of people I wanted to write with, and a lot of those people are just folks I have been fans of outside of country. But there's also people, I'm trying to think of Derek Sutherland, who's written a million amazing country songs. And one song I wrote in Germany with this German dude named Tilleman Locke, and we were pretty, I don't know, maybe I shouldn't talk about being drunk underage, but
it's a Raised Rowdy podcast.
We were pretty drunk in Germany, and we were sitting by a river, and I think we were like eating Subway or something, and wrote the song.
Subway when drunk is like clutch.
I think you can start drinking in Germany when you're like 13 or something.
Yeah.
So.
Oh yeah, I was just over there. I'd see like little kids just ripping it. So
brutal. Were you gigging over there or what?
Yeah, we did the whole C2C thing.
Oh, how was that?
It was really cool, man. I just didn't think people over there really cared a lot about country music and stuff in this vein, but I was proven wrong. A lot of people at these shows, and they were listening. Like especially like coming and doing like a lot of college shows and stuff like that. A lot of it's very rowdy. I mean, Raised Rowdy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But they just, it's like being in listening rooms, like they're silent crowds. And I was like, it's something pretty endearing about that. just playing, especially the softer songs, resonate really well.
I remember being in Europe somewhere, and we had Ashley McBride singing Girl Going Nowhere, and then the whole crowd was just, like, dead silent. And then, like, after each chorus, everyone would clap, or she would say, like, a certain word, and everyone would be like, or, like, when she goes, and, you know, and the band kicks in, and when they the band actually kicks in during that song, you know, I'm talking about the second verse, they did that, and you could just feel the room get goosebumps.
Wow. Because
they just listen. They just are, like, so attentive of everything. It's great. And so was that the – did you do the thing where you're, like, in Dublin and in London and
we
go to –
We just did the – Berlin and London ones.
Yeah.
And then we supported the Jack Wharf band on all their shows over there, which was really fun. We did Dublin with them and Glasgow and Manchester, and they're so good. I mean, they got that whole, like, bluegrass vibe going on right now.
Mm-hmm.
They're the best.
Hell yeah. And who else was on the C2C stuff?
Trying to think. Big names. I know Ty did a lot of that stuff.
Okay.
And that's actually where I first met Ty. I mean,
I was going to ask, is that how you got the tour?
He just, like, followed me on TikTok one day, and I sent him a text. I'm like, dig your stuff. And then we were just, like, chatting over there for a little bit. And then just randomly, I just got an email that he wanted to have me open for him. And I was like, yeah, absolutely. And we just met for the first time over in, Berlin.
That's so neat.
Bro, Ty's star is crazy right now. It's just, I feel like there's a lot of people that are maybe my age or older, you know, I'm 38, that are like, oh, who's Ty? I've heard his name a lot. And then there's a lot of people who are, like, obsessed with Ty Myers. Like, yeah. He's got a crazy fan base.
It's wild. I mean, even just being in Europe and seeing all the people just, like, he was like the Beatles over in that festival, you know?
Wow.
People just really into it. And he's so talented, so makes sense.
Yeah, we got to see him at Cafri last year, and he was playing pretty early in the day, and I've never seen a festival crowd that was there that early singing that many of the songs, you know, and it's just all, like, that demo, like, the younger folks.
Yeah.
It was crazy, and I was like, well, that's a good sign, you know?
It's wild, man, yeah.
It's so cool to see that, too. It's just building a fan base. Again, like, there's, with the way social media works now, and there's no, you know, often in country music space specifically, you'd see it like a 27 or 28 year old guy would, like, get their shot, right? Now you can take yourself to the front of the line, you know, by posting great content and having folks on TikTok demand shows, you know, things like that.
It's kind of wild the amount of, like, freedom, and you could connect with you could connect with the whole world on your phone now, which is just crazy.
It's wild. Yeah.
Didn't you sort of, like, have, like, your own page and then make, like, a second page or something?
Yeah, that's kind of how the whole Benny G thing started.
Tell us the whole story of that for those listening at home that don't know.
Yeah, so I actually was signed by Sony, like, way before the Benny G thing. Mm-hmm. And it, like, no, like, hate or anything. It just wasn't really working under my own artist name. Like, you know, just wasn't playing a lot of shows, didn't have a lot of social media things going on. And I don't think I really dug my heels into it enough, to be honest. And the music wasn't as cohesive, too. It was, like, all over the place. I'd have, like, a folk song. Then I have, like, a rock song. Then I have, like, a country song. It was just everything. But I was a lot younger.
Yeah,
so
you're probably 17 years
old. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I have two albums under that name that are still on Spotify and everything. And
that's crazy, dude. That's awesome.
Thanks, man. And then I was just kind of antsy, and I was wanting to make things happen. And, I think this is the first time I'm ever telling this story on, like, any time at all on the record, but I got a coffee with my dude who works at Sony, Nathan Thomas, and we both kind of had that vibe, like, okay, something's got to change right now. Like, we gotta do something, make something work, because I'd been signed, like, 2 years at that point, and was just wanted to make something happen. And he's like, you should just start an account and just sing and play guitar. Don't make it about, like, something cheesy or like lip sync things, or just like play the music, make it about the music, and just give it like a silly name. And I was like, okay, maybe I'll just like call it Benny G, because my mom used to call me, I mean, she still calls me Benny. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how my family knows me. They call me Benny, and G just being the last initial. And I just started that page called Benny G Sings, and like that's how I kind of decided to do the whole rebrand and everything
from that.
It's like a fresh slate.
Fresh slate, yeah. 100%. I'm 100% blessed that I got coffee with Nathan that day, or else I'd probably still be Ben Goldsmith, and I don't know if any of this would be happening right now.
Well, it's a, like you said, fresh canvas on which you can build that, but also probably felt like you kind of got the reins taken off too. Right, you got to be a little more yourself, or get to do the thing that
absolutely
you love to do the most, the music.
Absolutely. I always thought like social media and just doing things that weren't the music, like I always thought of it as like a battle, because I was like, I just want to play shows. I didn't get into it for any other reason, just because I love music. And I feel like as soon as the Benny G stuff happened, I stopped like trying to, like stop trying to be something I'm not, and rocked with the music and made it about the music 100%. It all clicked a little bit more. Yeah.
I love that. And how hard is it when you are, you know, freaking 16, 17, trying to figure out what your brand is? And
oh my God, I had
no clue.
I was throwing paint at the wall.
Right.
And I'm so grateful for, I'm so grateful for Sony and everybody that's been by my side. Like, just early believers, and literally I got discovered at Whiskey Jam when I was like 16, and that's kind of how it all started. Ward, Sony, they just kind of stuck by me.
I love that. It's so cool too. Like, Ward is such a great ambassador for new music, young artists that are performing, and it's super cool to hear that. And then getting to see you crush when we got to see you play. Mm-hmm. You know,
so. You had already, man. That was not your first time playing.
No. I played that, I guess, yeah, right before I got signed. That was like 2022, 2023. That was the first time I played Whiskey Jam. And yeah.
I think the first time I played Whiskey Jam was like 2013. It's been around for.
Oh, yeah.
The Losers setup.
Yeah.
Yep.
Back in the old
days.
So
cool. I hit it just at the end of it.
Yeah.
This is so cool, though. Yeah, this is cool now, though.
Oh, man. Absolutely. I used to play that with Luke all the time. Mm-hmm. That was probably my first gig ever with Luke, was at Whiskey Jam.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
And their production's so good now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Drop and everything.
Absolutely.
Yep. So who are some of the other, like, they always talk about, like, classes in Nashville, some other folks that are in your same, like, kind of age bracket that you think are great in the music scene, too?
Yeah, I'll shout out some people I love. Yeah. Solon Holt.
Yeah.
He's one of my really good buddies. He was also at C2C.
Yeah.
Crushed it. I try to see every show I could of his. I'm trying to think. I mean, I know everybody's raving about this Joshua Sloan album, but I think it really is that good.
Yeah.
It's so good. I'm trying to think of other people.
I've got some homework to do. Got some listening to do. Keep going. Give me this one more. Obviously, Ty.
Ty. Yeah. I mean, yeah, Ty's amazing. I'm trying to think of somebody else. I love. She's kind of just. She's not just starting. She's been at it for a minute, but she's so talented. Jay Joyce.
Yeah.
She's really good.
Yeah, we have her playing on Wednesday. She's so good.
Yeah. Nick's, oh my God.
Always hyping her up.
Yeah. Oh, what is it?
Nick's always talking about her.
She's so good.
Yeah, just same thing. Like, when you hear her play, just like you, honestly. Like,
thank you, man.
When you hear you guys play, it's just, you know, it's undeniable.
Oh, thanks, dude.
Which is, I mean, that's, you can't fake that. It's either there or it's not.
Like,
know?
She literally reminds me of a new Bonnie Raitt. Like, she's that good.
Hell yeah.
Insane.
Great player, too.
Oh, yeah. You know? She is so good.
Full package. That's cool. What are some of the things that you've gotten to do that, maybe like 17-year-old you would have like pinched yourself to do?
Oh man. Well, I mean, I played the Ryman in September. That so was cool. Crazy. I opened for Anderson East.
That's so sick.
It was, oh my God,
so
man.
Sad, dude.
And Anderson like has been like a just somebody I've looked up to my whole life. I was listening to him in middle school. Like, that whole album Encore was like,
sure,
that was probably, it still is one of my biggest influences. Mm-hmm.
I've never heard anything bad about him as a person either.
Like, he's such coolest, a chiller. Yeah. Such a chiller. And I mean, I've written a song with him, and wow, like, we're buddies now. It's so cool. So that's definitely up there, especially playing it with Anderson as well.
CDC, I'm sure was
pretty, that's pretty damn cool too.
Touring Europe.
Touring Europe, yeah. Oh my god, man. Europe, the Ryman. I guess playing the Bluebird.
Yeah.
Like, that's something, like, when you move to Nashville, it's like, it's the thing. I mean, all of the amazing songwriters are doing that, and I did that.
Who did you get to play that with?
John Green. I played that with Cecilia Casamon, who's also an amazing young singer-songwriter. Joey Hendrix, who's in that band Very Gently.
Mm-hmm.
So good.
That band's so good.
They are so good.
Yeah.
I feel like they're just kind of starting to, like, blow up a little bit too, yeah, and they are, oh my god.
That's who we saw when we saw Brothers Elsie.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I remember now.
This three-part harmony heaven.
Yeah,
so good.
So good.
Yeah, just butter. Their thing's so cool too, and it's I love that Nashville has so much different stuff in it. It's not just, you know, traditional country music. It's there's a good rock scene. There's a lot of indie. There's a lot of course, like, bluegrass.
Even in the country genre, there's all that stuff. You know what I mean? It's like, I was watching Ty play this, you know, stadium show. I'm like, this probably wouldn't have worked in the 90s. You know what I mean? Of course, obviously, but it's like, it's so cool that the lane is so wide now.
It is.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if I'd be considered a country artist in, like, the 90s too. It's, I feel like it's such a supportive avenue for music right now. And like, I think as long as you kind of respect and know your history a little bit and kind of pay your reverence to it, like, it's so, like, the lane is so wide. Like, there's so much stuff happening right now.
Absolutely agree. It's such a wide lane. And then, I mean, again, like, even in Nashville, there's so much more than even what you would consider country.
Yeah.
Just because there's so many great musicians here. What are some of the things, like, you talked about, you know, a good chunk of your influences.
But yeah,
some of, like, maybe the artists that when you heard, you were like, man, I want to do that.
I know we're talking so much about Stapleton, but, like, mm-hmm, that is really probably the biggest one, mm-hmm, for me. John Mayer as well. Ray LaMontagne was a very big one. I'm trying to think who else. I mean, I remember listening to Sailor's Guide from Sturgill.
Yeah.
And that was, I mean, I don't sound like Sturgill, but that's just a big one.
Yeah.
I love Billy Joel. He's, like, outside of country, like, probably my favorite songwriter ever.
Yeah.
Everyone likes Billy Joel.
Yeah. Like, yeah. You know what I
mean? Can't hate him.
Totally.
And just, like, the whole, like, Laurel Canyon scene of songwriters, like James Taylor and Joni
best.
And yeah, all that stuff. James Taylor probably being number one, though.
He played that. I just got to tell a story, but he played the Concert for Carolina benefit that, like,
oh my god, dude.
And so I got to meet James Taylor, and Corey and Matt played with him, two guys from Luke's band.
Wow.
And I'm like, there's steel guitar on these songs. Like, come on, guys. But I got to hang out with him, and he was just, like, the nicest, coolest guy.
That
and
is,
like,
the coolest thing to hear.
I watched their sound check the night before, and I just sat outside, and it was James Taylor was sound checking, and I was smoking a cigar, and just listening to him and his son and their whole band sing, it was, like, the most insane singers. There's, like, five of them. And they're just, like, a choir of angels. It was crazy.
Wow.
And they're singing James Taylor songs. So they're singing amazing. It was just, like, of course they're not running any tracks, not running any click, and they're just doing it, and it's just amazing. It was so incredible.
Oh, man.
And I was asking Corey and Matt, like, what's it like playing with James Taylor? And they're like, it's hard because he does his thing, and it's not like, it's very organic, and it flows and moves and it changes. So it's like, you have to just, you're just dialed in on him the whole time. And so you don't know when he's going to move, or, you know, it's not like you have to, like, follow him. But he's facing this way, so you're behind him, and you're looking at his right hand to see when he's about to kind of, you know what I mean? It's like, and everyone else in the band has played with him for so long. They're all, you know, he's got the fiddle player and everything, and they're all so tuned in. They're just like the new guys coming into this like kind of private conversation, you know what I mean? So it was like, it was really cool. And Corey's like, dude, check this out. And he showed his phone, and it's like, hey, like, I just appreciate everything you did. And it's an email from James Taylor. Like, thanks so much. Hope to see you again soon. Like, love, JT or whatever, you know.
Whoa.
I'm like, bro, you have James Taylor's email address. I'm like, give me your phone. He's like, no.
Oh, my God, man. Wow. Dude, he is definitely one of the most underrated acoustic guitar players ever. Agreed. Like, his guitar voicings and just, it's crazy.
Yeah, and he's got that right hand thing, and he plays all these crazy changes, and while singing everything, the songs are brilliant.
Oh yeah, he's one of the greatest.
Also, I've read somewhere that he said I've only written like 80 songs or something.
What?
Yeah, like
only 80?
Yeah, like Paul McCartney's like, you got to write 1,000 bad songs to get to your first good one, which is like what I think you should do. That's the advice I would give to people. But James is like, he writes very few songs. I'm sure he writes a lot and doesn't finish them, kind of a thing. But it's like he just doesn't write a lot. That's what he says. I don't even know how that could be physically possible. You know what I mean?
Like, he just has such a good batting ratio. Where it's,
yeah, he's batting 1,000. He just maybe doesn't tell us about the bad songs, I guess.
Yeah. Wow.
I don't know.
Crazy.
I don't really know any. I can't think of any bad James Taylor songs.
No, obviously not. No way.
Yeah. It's just everything.
Crazy. I mean,
how many records does he have? He only written 80 songs.
I don't know. It's like something like that where he just like basically writes a set of songs and then puts it out. You know, it's like Bailey Zimmerman. Like, he wrote one song, put it out, and went viral. He got a record deal. He wrote a second song, and it was his first number one. His second song he wrote.
Whoa.
I'm like, what?
Second song he ever put out?
Yeah, so he wrote one song, and I can't remember the name of it right now. And the second song he ever wrote was called Fall in Love, and it was his first radio single and went number one.
That's absurd.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he put out, I guess, Rock in the Hard Place was his second single, I think, which is like he just cut that song. No, he had a second song that, I don't know. Anyway, but it's kind of a similar thing where he just...
Only the hits.
Yeah, which is funny. A good way to do it, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. How old were you... Like, because we haven't been on a podcast before, so like, how old were you when you started like really playing music? Like, at what age did your parents get you rolling on?
Give you the whole spiel.
Yeah,
spiel us.
I'll spiel you.
Talking spiel.
I kind of grew up in a musical family. Like, my grandpa conducted big bands and played saxophone and every woodwind you could probably think of, and would do a bunch of like wedding band gigs. Just a lot of privates, stuff like that. Very New York. And my mom was like, she is an amazing violin player. And she was like kind of on track to do the whole like Juilliard thing and like send being in like some crazy symphony one day. And she just kind of fell out of love with it. So she's a lawyer now. But
hey, when that happens.
Hey, when that happens too. I still bug her sometimes to like, hey, do you want to like film a video with me? And you know, she'll pick up the violin.
Was she cool?
Yeah. I actually got her to record a part, which was pretty cool.
On the record?
Not on this one. Maybe I'll get her. It's like an unreleased cover. I was gonna put out a while ago a cover of What a Wonderful World during the holiday time, but it just didn't happen. But she played on that. So maybe it will see the light of day at some point. I'm hearing like myself a little bit.
But it's like a buzz.
Yeah, it's chill.
And then is your dad a musician also or what?
He's like a hack musician. Yeah. Like he loves like REM and like plays some bar chords here and there, but nothing crazy. Like he loves playing like Green Day songs and anything on like a cheap squire, and he's tone deaf, but it's great. Yeah. But I started when I was six. I actually got violin lessons. Actually, before that, when I was three or four, my mom like tried to get me to do the whole violin thing, and I was just like the worst kid ever. Like, gave this violin teacher like a heart attack, pretty much. But she was like, "He has perfect pitch, so you know, that help him out.
My next question. Do you
I do.
I'm not surprised.
And then I picked up the guitar. I saw, I think it was AC/DC Live at the River Plate. That was the, that was what I was watching at the time. And I was just like, I want to do that. Yep. And that's what I wanted to do for a while. And I didn't have any hopes to be a songwriter or be a singer or do the country music thing until I was maybe 13. I was in tons of like garage bands and like would just play street fairs and play like blues rock songs and heavy rock songs. And it was great. I was just in love with playing rock guitar. And then at some point my mom was like, okay, like this is all great. I'm happy you love rock. I'm happy you want to be a guitar player, but if you want to be a serious guitar player, like you got to learn some jazz. You got to do something to kind of expand your palate a little bit more. And I am very thankful she did that. So I did some like pre-college programs at Manhattan School of Music and Manus. And
yeah,
I was maybe 13, 14, with just learning like Charlie Parker songs and like Herbie Hancock songs, just anything in the real book, and was just shedding. And then I'm totally going on a long-winded thing here, but then I studied with John Mayer's guitar teacher, Tomo Fujita, for like 2-3 years.
In Boston or where at?
My parents would drive me from New York to Boston every Sunday for like 2-3 years. And then, Wow. Yeah, I mean, just best parents ever.
Yeah.
And, it was just, I learned so much I probably learned more about music in those 2 to 3 years from Tomo than like I ever probably will or did. And then the songwriting hit.
Okay, before we go into songwriting, I went to Berkeley. I don't know if you knew that.
Oh, damn. I didn't know that.
Yeah. And but I didn't study with Tomo. But what's it like working with Tomo?
He is probably the most talented musician I have ever met and will ever know. He's just complete, like, discipline is, like, the whole thing. So I would, like, play a chord progression, and he would be like, well, you picked the B string a little flubby. You should just try it again. And like, then we would spend like an entire lesson, like playing like a Marvin Gaye chord progression. And he would find every little detail about like the way I'm strumming to like the way I'm holding the guitar to be like, you know, no, you shouldn't do that. You should play lighter. I don't know. Everything mattered. Oh yeah. It was all about touch and feel, but it was crazy.
I had one of my teachers at Berkeley, and because I was like really into like studying jazz and stuff too, and I was like a metal guitar player, hard rock guy, and he was like, "Yeah, man, you don't have the touch." And I was like, "Yeah, I know. For me, touch wasn't a thing. Like, I just didn't soul." And he's like, "Do you ever just like play the blues?" I'm like, "Yeah." But in my head, I'm like, no. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It wasn't something like I was just completely like tone deaf to it, because I was like playing Dream Theater songs. You know what I mean?
Dream Theater is awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. But like there's a lot more like chicks going to a Benny G show than there are a Dream Theater show. You know, even if Dream Theater's playing arenas and you're playing clubs or whatever. You know what I mean? And it was just like and then I had a teacher that told me that. And it was just kind of like this eye-opening thing of like, I don't have this in my playing. Like tone, it's like I just kind of just played whatever guitar I owned. You know what I mean? It's like so important. That's awesome that you like got into that so early. For me, it was like I was already basically graduated from college studying music before I like really even like got into that kind of stuff. And then it's like you're playing on records that are your own and doing your own artistry thing. It's like that's the stuff that matters so much. You know, no one cares about Dream Theater when you're cutting a country soul record, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool. Anyway,
thank you, man.
I was always curious what it's like, because I know Tomo probably gets a lot of students because he famously taught Mayer.
100%. Yeah.
Mayer has a huge respect for him, so there's probably a good reason why, you know.
No, and he's just like the most humble dude ever. He's complete sensei vibe.
Yeah, and whenever I'm like, you know, doom scrolling, and I see some guitar player playing something incredible, and then Tomo always writes like, "Great playing, like you have a light," or something like so.
Yeah,
he's something's just got such great vibes, like no vibes. You know what I mean? It's just great happiness all the time.
That's 100% him. Nah, he's the best, man.
Very cool. So cool. Okay, so then you started getting into songwriting at some point.
Yeah, so actually around the time I was studying with Tomo, I started getting into the writing. And yeah, it was kind of around the time I discovered Mayer and Stapleton, like right around the same time. My mom showed me that clip of Mayer playing Ain't No Sunshine at Crossroads. You guys know what I'm talking mm-hmm, about? Mm-hmm. And then I saw that whole Stapleton Justin Timberlake thing. I think it was at the Grammys, the video
CMA
of that.
CMA Awards.
Yeah. And I was like, who is this? Like,
the entire world was like that.
Yeah.
Everyone in Nashville, we were all like, oh, cool. Like, we all knew. Like, we all had the Traveler record. You know, it's like, it sold 10,000 copies. And they were all in Nashville. And then that happened. Then he sold 100,000 copies. Like,
that
in the next
sick.
Week.
Yeah. Yeah. But, yeah, I found those videos around the same time. And I was like, okay, I want to, you know, want to do that thing for sure. And I was writing just, and I think this is around the time COVID happened as well. So I kind of made a pact by myself to, you know, like I was in all these bands at the time, like nothing was really going anywhere. And I was like, okay, if there's one thing I'm going to do, if this COVID thing is really happening right now, I'm just going to try and come out being the best songwriter I could be. So I wrote a song like every day, and they were terrible. And I also learned Logic at the time and was like learning how to produce like terribly, but you know, I had all like the free MIDI sounds and was just going after it. And yeah, I think by the end of that, I really was not as bad. I think I was still a bad songwriter, but I wasn't as bad. And then I started from there. I started taking some trips to Nashville, like playing like the Commodore Grill.
Oh my
and
God, like, brutal.
Yeah, you know. You
yes,
know.
I played Commodore with Luke before. I think.
Oh wow.
Or like maybe we went and like Rob played, and we all just were drinking beers. How would you, if, for the listeners at home, how would you describe the Commodore Grill?
There's like five old people. No, I love my old people, but you know, it's just when you're 15, it's, you know, you want to see a pretty college girl, and
yeah,
was not that at all. But
it's sort of like the bottom of the barrel of the Nashville songwriting community sometimes.
I would say that
it's like where anyone could go and play. So sometimes you'll get a Rob Wilford or a Benny G, but sometimes you'll just get some people, and it's just like they're playing Sweet Home Alabama. Like, this is a writer's round. Like,
yeah,
what are you doing?
Yep. And there are definitely a fair share of characters.
And then what's the lady's name that like runs the sound, and she will sing harmony over you, your song from front of the house?
I think that may have happened during mine. Yeah.
It's Haggard there. Anyway, sorry. So you were visiting Nashville and you play the
Commodore. Like Commodore and
Douglas Corner or whatever.
I actually didn't do Douglas Corner, but I've heard.
I've only done it once. I vowed I'd never do it again.
And I would, the dude at Bella Napoli Pizzeria was a very nice man, and he let me play outside on his patio for an entire summer. Like, while I was, because I like made it like a thing to myself, I'm just gonna go to Nashville for the summer. Mm-hmm. My best friend who plays bass in the band is a few years older than me, and James, who I was talking about, he was down here as well, so hung out with him. And yeah, man, I just kind of took it on. Bella Napoli. We play there every Saturday. I did the Corner Pub every Sunday, and I would do the Commodore Grill. Where else would I play?
And how old were you at this point?
Damn, I must have been 15, 16.
And you're playing 3-hour cover gigs or whatever?
Yeah, 3-hour cover gigs, and you know, sprinkling my originals that were bad at the time in, but you know, you get the point. A lot of Mayer, a lot of Stapleton, a lot of Stevie Wonder, just anything that made me feel a little bit better doing it. And yeah, I'm trying to think. And then Ward was just at one of the Corner Pub shows, and so was Mitchell Tenpenny. They were both there hanging out, watching me, and Mitchell was like, dude, like, you're the man, like, keep doing it. Just like super encouraging, nice. And that was like one more thing to just like keep sending it. I was like, heck yeah. And then Ward was like, you want to come play Whiskey Jam? And a I did Whiskey Jam, and then I literally, like, Ward put me on blast, and he was like, this kid, he's 16, yada, yada, yada. I was just went up there, played the acoustic guitar, and, like, didn't have a band, just did it myself, and didn't play Sweet Home Alabama or any covers, yeah. which felt so redeeming, and, yeah, the next morning, like the video didn't go viral, per se, but it went viral within, like, the Nashville music industry, and I woke up to a DM. Yeah.
Warner Chappell followed you.
Yeah. All these A&R dudes just hitting me up, like, hey, I'm with Atlantic. Hey, I'm with Sony. Bah, 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 bah. And then I just took a bunch of meetings, and I didn't know, you know, I was like, well, I just didn't know if I was going to take a record deal, because I was like, am I ready for this? Like, I didn't really have a vision or didn't know what type of music I wanted to make or anything, but I knew I wanted to do this for the rest of my life, and the Sony Nashville people were like, we're just going to be super careful, and, like, we just believe in you, and we know at some point, like, we just think it's going to all work, and we want to just put in the work with you. And I was, like, just super taken aback by that, and signed my deal with them, and that's the whole story, pretty much.
So cool.
Damn. That's what a crazy ride.
I know. Already.
You're just starting, you know, of course.
Hasn't even played Red Rocks yet.
Crazy. Oh, my God.
20-year-old and you haven't even played Red Rocks? What a scrub.
Oh, my God. Oh.
So funny. No, man, it's that's the thing, too. It's so cool. And honestly, that's a more traditional Nashville way than, like, having to get all of your smoke on social media, which you have had since, right? Like,
oh, my God, yeah. I mean, it's been great, the whole social media thing in the past year, but... I'm very happy it's happened the way it has, because I feel like I almost am the person where, like, I feel like I'd probably feel some guilt if I didn't pay my dues a little bit in town, like, just doing those things. Like, I feel like you should do that.
It builds character for sure, you know?
Yeah.
That way, if you go and you play to no one a couple times, doesn't feel super weird.
Yeah, no.
You know? And you know how to play a gig.
Yeah.
100%.
You know how to act on stage when you're at Red Rocks. Or Madison Square Garden or whatever.
God, that's the shooting star. That is, like, the...
Is that your, like, dream venue?
Oh, MSG. I mean, Long Island Kid.
Of course.
Like,
of course. Billy Joel.
That's
10,000 times.
That is literally... If I could do that, if I could do the Billy Joel thing, I would do it.
Yeah, totally.
Send it.
You're going to need 1,000 comps for that one.
Oh, my God, yes. I'm getting the entirety of Nashville to come to that.
our drummer's from Long Island, and when we played MSG, Jake's parents threw like Luke's management or whatever, I think they bought like 50 tickets for their family. It was just like,
wow,
they just, everyone came. Yeah,
as they should.
Yeah, of course, absolutely. Long Island, I'm gigging over here.
Yeah, what are you talking about? I'm playing MSG tonight.
Well, man, thank you for coming out and hopping on the pod.
Thanks for having me. This
absolutely
is great.
It's been great. From seeing you the first time I did, and honestly, like, literally before we had that happen, Kurt just, like, gushing over you once
well,
he met you.
So. You're the man, bro.
Dude, you are, dude. Congrats. The record's great, dude.
Thank you, man. Thank you, dude.
It's such a good representation, like you said, of your sound, and we can't wait to hear what's next after that, man.
Dude, yeah, I just came from a right now, and I'm just like, soon as, you know, I mean, we're going to release this EP, but I'm, like, already on to, like, what's the album look like. And I'm just, there's never-ending thoughts, never-ending songwriting. So hopefully music,
working,
you know, after the EP.
Yeah, that's the way it keeps working, man. And you can see the work ethic that you have, hear you talk about it from, and honestly, you see it, how good you play.
And
your
love of music, man.
Yeah,
thank you guys.
I want to go write a song right now.
Yeah, I mean, you guys should do that. I will not. Yeah. But
let's do it.
Well, guys, thanks for joining us. Make sure you follow Benny on social media. Do you want to shout out your handles?
Sure. Yeah, Benny G Sings with a Z.
Singer. He's a singer.
Sings. And you could follow the Spotify and the Apple Music. Just Benny G and Bands in Town. I'm blanking, and I don't think I have a Twitter, so there you go.
The new EP, check out the new EP, and go see him on tour with Ty.
Yo.
All right, y'all, thanks for checking it out.
Cheers.
Cheers.